The following content is provided by MIT OpenCourseWare under a Creative Commons license. Additional information about our license and MIT OpenCourseWare in general is available at ocw.mit.edu.
What we will need in most of the cases when we deal with transport. Although I say in reality the structure could be complex, but in terms of when we do the analysis, this simple format of the wave vector energy relation will be sufficient. What we call this a parabolic band approximation. We are dealing with a small region near the maximum or the minimum. You can see as long as this gradient, the maximum minimum, the gradient is continuous, the first order derivative is zero, so you can always have the second order expansion. So this is for the electrons, and for photons, we have similar treatment. Now the real structure dispersion is more like a sine in one dimension, sine function, and this is a pi over a in specific kx direction. But we use often, again, if we do the expansion, and the difference is here, very often we don't use the, because this point, sine function at this point, the gradient is not zero. Okay, we do not use the parabolic approximation. We use the linear approximation more often. And this linear approximation, so you can plot as an energy, or for photon lattice vibration, we more accustomed to use the frequency of the vibration. So we plot that as a function of frequency. And here is this linear approximation is called the Bi approximation. And for this approximation tells us linear, so it's the velocity, that's the slope, and times the wave vector. And this wave vector, so if again you assume this is an isotropic in all directions, it's the same. So the wave vector, this is the value of the wave vector, then it's kx squared plus ky squared plus kz squared. Again, between minus pi over a to plus pi over a, you have n wave vectors in each direction, right? And your energy at each frequency then is h nu n plus 1/2. That's the quantization at each frequency. Because you have n value, of those values are all very close, and then corresponding to each wave vector, there is corresponding frequency, vibrational frequency. And what this quantum quantization just tells you, at that frequency, there can only be integer of h nu, and the h nu is the photon. So those are what we discussed for the solid side. What we have not discussed for solid is what's the G? What's the degeneracy? Right? We said here, for simple atoms, 1D, and rotors, there is a degeneracy that corresponds to one energy level. There can be multiple quantum states, right? And you can now think, for solid, for corresponding to one energy level, so this is a one energy level that I'm interested in, and then in kx direction, I have one solution, ky direction have one solution, kz direction. But in any arbitrary direction, I may have a solution. Arbitrary sets of kx, ky, kz value, I may have a solution. And let's put this in more visual form. If you think this is an isotropic, right? E is isotropic, so obey this one. So a constant energy surface is what? In three dimension, kx, ky, kz as my axis. It's a sphere, right? So this is the a constant energy surface is a sphere, and okay, this is my energy equals constant. So I can have lots of potential kx, ky, kz values that have the falling onto this sphere, right? I can have many combinations of kx, ky, kz value, and each of these points on the sphere that satisfy this equation is one quantum mechanical state, right? So, but also because, so how I count this number of states? Now the difference between the molecule or 1D simple case with this case is my kx, ky, kz is very closely spaced. Those are very close spaced. This value in energy, if you can see, this curve is nearly continuous, right? So I want to count not a specific energy value. I want to count how many states in a differential energy range, small energy range of E, how many quantum mechanical states I have there. Because E is nearly continuous. Okay, so that's what I want to do next, because I want to find out how many states, and the goal is to find out a differential increase in E, how many quantum mechanical states, this is N is the number of quantum mechanical states. Okay? And this delta, I take the limit delta approach differential, but let me just write as a finite value. No, delta, small delta. Okay? So that's what I want to find out next. And this corresponds back to, really, in the discrete case, I use degeneracy. But in this quasi-continuum case, this one, at the end, I will call it the density of states. And as you can see, it's for the purpose of counting. It's not a great physics there. It's just, but it's very useful for counting purpose. And so, how we would count it? I want to see how many quantum mechanical states when my E increase by small delta E. So, if I have this simple case again, a spherical band, and here is a similar. If you look at the Folon. Because I assume symmetry. And what I want, so E is here. I want to increase E by delta E, so I have another increase, right? I mean, I don't draw the whole sphere, for otherwise the figure will become crowded. So I want to increase this E by delta E. And that means here, will increase by delta kx, and similarly, I have an increase here, delta kz, and in y direction, delta ky. Each will increase delta k to allow that this E increase in delta E. Right? So I want to find out how much in this shell, small shell from E to E plus delta E, how much quantum mechanical states there? Okay. Now, to do that, let me project. Here, I'm drawing the constant energy surface, but let me just do a 2D, right? So this is my kx, this is the ky, and you can translate back into 3D. And what I have from this solution of allowable kx, ky, kz value is here I have 2 pi lx. Here I have 4 pi lx and 6 pi lx. You increase this every 2 pi. And same thing is in this 2 pi Ly, 4 pi Ly. So each of those intersect, that's the one quantum state, this is the other quantum state, that's another quantum state. Each of those represent one set of combination, right? And now my constant delta E surface, when E is constant, that also means this K is constant, right? K is the radius of the Kx, Ky, Kz space, right? So what I'm saying, trying to find out is this constant E, which also really means this radius here, which is the K, the magnitude, not a vector, the magnitude of this sphere. And here is K plus delta K, right? That's magnitude. This is not Kx, Ky, Kz. It's the magnitude of K. So equivalently, if I can find out how much quantum mechanical states, and I have to draw the whole sphere, I'm only draw one quadrant in 2D or 1/8 in 3D. How many states there? If this is a very large number, I can do this way. I can find out how much volume this shell has, and then I see how much is the volume one quantum mechanical state is in K-space. What's the volume of one quantum state? If you look at this is one, two, three, four, each dot is one quantum state. So what's the volume there, one quantum state? 4 pi, okay, 2 pi, L, let me take L the same in all direction, okay? So square is for area. If it's 3D, it's a cubic, right? So that's the volume of one state in the K space, quantum mechanical states. Now, if I know the volume of this shell, then I know how much delta N. Right? In 3D, if it's a sphere, how much, what's the volume of this shell? Spherical shell. So 4 pi k squared is the surface area times delta k is the volume. Right? So this delta n is 4 pi k squared delta k. Right? Oh, no, I'm sorry. This is the total volume in K space. I have to divide by V1. That's the number of quantum mechanical states. This is the number of quantum mechanical states in that volume. Because this is the total volume of that K space, and this is the per quantum state how much it takes in K space. Right? So, this, if I plot... plug in this L cubic as the volume, total volume of the crystal, and then 4 pi, I have 4 pi cubic here, 2 pi cubic, I have 4 pi here, so I get 2 pi square and k square delta k, right? Plug in this V1 in there. This volume is total crystal volume. V is L cubic, right? So now I have delta N. I want to find out per unit energy increase. I divide by delta E. Okay, so this is my delta N divided by delta E is, I like to, not a book, do not divided by volume. I like to normalize by volume. That's a per unit volume. This is density of states per unit volume, okay, because volume appears. So what I have here is 2 pi square k square delta k divided by delta E, right? Mathematical operation. So all these are very intuitive. The next step is the math part. I want to express everything either in energy or in frequency or in wavelength. What I do? I have the relationship between energy and K. I just replace that. And this, in the limit of delta E, very small, I have DE, DK, DE, right? In the limit of this very small, then I call this my density of states is K square 2 pi square DK, DE. And you can say I have the energy K relation. Here, I essentially have energy K relation or frequency K relation, right? I have all these relations, so I just need to use those relations and substitute to find out what's the density of states. But when I deal with different carrier, I add a little bit more. I have to consider the electron spin. Here, I have not considered spin, right? And when I do Fourier, I have longitudinal transverse Fourier. So I add into that. So let me do more detail on the electron side. Electron, I have there already E equals EC equals plus H bar square K square divided by 2M. And I also know the electron has two spin, and this one has not include the spin up, spin down. So it has a factor of two more quantum mechanical states than what I have here, right? So then the electron density of states is a factor of two more than what I have there, K square, 2 pi square, and the DK, DE. So I just now need to replace this K and express everything in E. So I have K, 2 cancel, pi square still there. K square, you can see from here I get K square, K equals 2M star H bar, H square E minus EC square root. So I just substitute in K square in terms of energy, DKDE, I find out what is DKDE from here, right? This to replace with that. Let me give you the final results. What I have is 2 pi square and 2m star h square 2/3 and E minus EC. So this is the electron density of states. Right? Per unit, if you increase the energy a little bit, DE, you increase this many states. And this is a square root relation, so if I plot density of states, this is a DE, and then it's a square root function. And this is a E, this is a EC. Parabolic. In the other way, right? So that's the electron. And I can do Fourier. And the Fourier density of states, if I say Debye model, and in the Debye model, it just does not distinguish longitudinal transverse. Remember, we have two transverse, one longitudinal, right? And Debye model say all these three modes are identical. They just take one curve, one straight line there, say that's three modes, okay? They fall into the same curve. So although I have one curve only, this for each corresponding to each K value, I already have three quantum mechanical states, three modes there. Because these three modes have the same energy or frequency. Right? So I have, but I don't want to use energy in this case. I want to use frequency interval per delta nu, not delta E. I go back to here, rather than do delta E, I do delta nu, the frequency. Right? So I have, in this case, I have my density of states I express in terms of the frequency. I don't use the energy symbol. That would be my delta N divided by delta nu under the bimodal I time a factor of 3 because longitudinal 1 transverse 2, a total of 3. Right? And I already have delta N this way per unit volume. Okay, let me say I always divide by volume. So I have here, and I do delta. So what I have, this factor of 3 is still there, 2 pi square, and k square. I need a dk d nu. Right? Because here I have delta k, delta nu. When nu is small, dk d nu. And then I come back to the dispersion I have here. This is a nu k relation. I replace k in terms of the frequency. Right? So that's the bimodal tells me nu equals vk. This k is the magnitude of square root of kx, ky, kz. So I get 3, 2 pi square, and v cubic, velocity cubic, the frequency square. Right? So this is the Fourier density of states. Are you following me? Okay. So this is a Fourier, and I did not talk electromagnetic wave, but let me just also give you the electromagnetic wave. You can do the particle in a box. Okay, that's the molecule energy level of, if you do that 3D particle in a box solution, you can do that. You can also do the electromagnetic wave and the photon wave. Photon, we have the frequency, speed of light, wave vector. Right? Photon, what you're proper familiar is, okay, omega. Ah, there. This is not new. This is the omega. Sorry. Because omega is 2 pi. K is 2 pi divided by lambda. Okay? So put the correct everything there. Here is omega equals vk. And this is h nu. That's fine. And let me do omega, d omega. If I do d nu, I got to include that 2 pi. Also in the denominator. Every time, because here I do d omega, if I do d nu, is a 2 pi factor there. Okay? And so omega equals ck for photon, and that is very similar to the bimodal. Right? It's just a speed of light rather than speed of sound. This way is speed of sound. This is more or not exactly. It's the bi-velocity, but it's close to speed of sound. This is the speed of light. But there's another difference. Electromagnetic wave is not longitudinal. It's only transverse. Two transverse, right? So what I have there, I change these three into two because it's not longitudinal. So for photon, I have d omega equals omega squared pi squared v squared. Okay? And let me just also suggest you to go back and say, I don't want to write that as d omega. I want to write that as d lambda. Lambda is wavelength. Okay? Remember, when we plot the black body radiation, there are different ways to plot it. If you do heat transfer, the most familiar way is actually plot as a function of wavelength. This is a black body emissive power as a function of wavelength. In that case, we will need d lambda rather than d omega. You can plot as a function of frequency. You can plot that function of wavelength. Okay, this all, of course, at the end, it's all interchangeable, but when you derive it, because this is in the denominator, you got to be a little bit more careful whether you use omega, nu, or wavelength. So this is effectively saying that I am finding now the degeneracy for the solid side, or electrons, photons, and in the case, photons. And what's the use of it? In the long run, when we count how much energy each, say, in the transport, or how much charge in the transport process, we have to find out how many particles carrying how much energy. And this one tells us, this one will tell us, these are the quantum mechanical states, so each state could have n particles. So, but let me give you one example, because we have not gotten into the details of at a different temperature. And one example, somebody asked me before, in 3D, where the electron fell to the topmost, right? We said in 1D, if you have two electrons, you will go to fill to the top already per atom. But that's not the case in 3D. We want to find out where in 3D, where is the topmost of the electron field. And this will be using the density of states will be very easy to do. So let's say we have n atoms. Each atom has, per atom we have, the volume is here. This is the volume of crystal. And if each atom contributes to one electron, okay, so per unit volume, how many electrons? What I have is then, I have then, N divided by V is the electron density, right? Per unit volume. Okay, you can see two electrons. Oh. And now, let's say the if I have electron bands, parabolic bands, okay? This is the band, the approximation we use, K, and it's a spherical in 3D. And I know that it feels starting from the bottom at zero temperature. I do the zero temperature. I don't know how to do other temperatures yet. Okay? At zero temperature, they fill to the bottom first, the lowest level, and they fill up. Right? I want to find out where is the topmost level it fill to. It's just because each quantum state can only have maximum one electron. I just need to say where is the at what wave vector level that will have this is per unit volume. This is how many electrons, because each quantum state has only one electron. So I need to find out per unit volume at what wave vector I got the same number of quantum states. So what I need to do is, at what level K to water energy level here, I will have, and that energy level I use the symbol EF, I will have the same number of states, quantum mechanical states, per unit volume. So I do the integration from 0 to EF. During this energy interval, how many quantum mechanical states? Right? Because delta E is the number of states per unit energy interval, right? If you look at what we have here, is the number of quantum mechanical states per unit energy interval. And look at the definition here, right? This delta N we have is the quantum mechanical states. I want to find out how many per unit volume. I do dE times density of states times dE. I integrate to the topmost because I know below that is a field and above that is empty. So I do that. Here is my EC, okay? It could be zero or some other value, so I don't do zero. I do general EC. And EC, EF, and now you substitute in the density of states. Electron, what I have here, 2 pi squared, everything to the integration. So I have 2 pi squared and 2m h bar squared, 2m star h bar squared, and this is 2/3. E minus EC integration dE, and you can carry out that integration of this constant. The square root of the integration gives you times 2/3, that's out of the square root of integration, 2m star h squared, 2/3, and the E minus EC, EF minus EC, 2/3. Right? So what it tells me is if you give me electron number density, I can find out where they feel the topmost level where it is, energy level. Right? So that's where this EF, and this EF here is called the Fermi level. Fermi level, most of the time people refer to actually the energy level at absolute zero. But a lot of times people also use it to call the energy level at other different temperature. That's not a rigorous limb. That in that other temperature, it's more the proper limb is not Fermi level, it's chemical potential. Okay? So this is the give me one example. And the other comment I want to make is now this is the case when kx, ky, kz is continuum, nearly continuous. Kx, ky, kz spacing is very small, right? And if you go to look at the solution, we can now start to deal with some quantum structures. Okay? And if I have a thin film, for example, and let's say this is a K, this is the X direction, and this is the Y direction, this is Z direction, X, Y, Z, so Y direction, a film. And I can now write down the energy level. In the Z direction, it's like a quantum wave. That's a one-dimensional solution. In the XY direction, it's big. It's a continuum. So you can go to write quickly this following by combining the combining this form, but it's only for XY direction. And then one-dimensional quantum well, the energy there I can find out what are the allowable energy level. And again, this is assuming the potential at the boundary is very infinite high. So h squared 2m star kx squared plus ky squared plus 8m h squared and d squared. So this is the d distance. It's very similar to the kz, but I don't write the kz. I write in the finite difference form. N. Well, this is n equals 1, 2, and integers. Those are the allowable values. And now when d is very small, and that n divided by d is big, it's not like kx. Remember, kx is 2 pi lx. This lx is a big crystal, microscopic. But in the z direction, it's a few nanometer, a few hundred tens of nanometer. It's small. So what happens? What's the energy? What does the energy look like? It's in the z direction. It's no longer continuous like a kz, which can take a lot of small values. In the z direction, it can only take discrete values with big separation. So what you plot will say, okay, this is my kx, this is my ky, and the n equals 1 will be a disk here. That will be n equals 1. Kx, ky, this is kx, ky direction, could still be a lot of value, small values, because kx, ky spacing is small. Right? But the kz, I cannot be a small value. Next kz is n equals 2, correspond to n equals 2. That's not a small distance from this plan. That will be somewhere here, depends on what's the d value. Right? So in between here, so this, let's say this is a one surface, one disk. This is another disk. In between, there's no quantum mechanical states. Right? Okay? And you can further increase 3. And so now, what happens if you increase, if your energy is a small increase? Okay, so the next one probably is here. I have to probably draw this way. Okay, this is E to delta E. This may be N3. Okay, now if I increase E only, not intersect the, if this is E plus delta E, I do not get to the next and higher energy states. Delta E will have, say, the states. Once you get to this level, you'll have more states. But in between these two levels, you can only have room to increase kx, ky. You don't have room in the z direction, kz direction, because it has not reached the next level. Okay? So that's the one effect of the quantization. And if you go to do the analysis following the same strategy, you will find out what's the... I have an example in the text, so I'm going to skip the detail. But because of that discontinuity, you'll find out this will be your energy density of states. And this corresponds to n equals 1. This corresponds to n equals 2. When your energy increase, reach the next level, you suddenly have a jump, more room to accommodate more states. So this is an n equals 3. So this will be the density of states shape in a quantum well or thin film. Now, if you have a wire, very small, in two dimension, you are confined. But the x, kx, you can still have very, very small steps. But in KZ direction, you only can have big steps. And in that case, you do the same analysis, you find out those are the shape of the dense substrates for electrons. Okay? Or if you have three dimensions all confined, very small, then you'll find the discrete, just at certain energy value, you have more certain high gas states. So those are the effects of quantization will affect the energy level, will affect the density of states. And this have a lot of implication in terms of the properties of the structure. Now, so these are the in terms of what we talked before, all the detail, maybe you don't get all the details, but getting those is important for the next step. And now next step is to think about the different temperature, because what we dealt so far is quantum mechanics that tells us what are possible energy levels. And then I say at the absolute zero, like what I example I gave here, at the absolute zero, they fill to the bottom and up. That's the level of filling. But what happens at a different temperature, room temperature? And there are some thermal energy. They will no longer just fill to the this level. There could be some flexibility. So our next step is adding in the effects of temperature. And that's the content of chapter 4, the statistical thermodynamics. So let's deal with and thermal energy storage, or energy storage. And in my strategy in this chapter is first to give you what are the probability distribution. And then this chapter I go, if you see I've been going very fast, this chapter I go faster, okay? So I give you the essential results. And then what I'm going to do next, after giving essential results, I want you relax and learn a few limbs, terminology. And those terminology, if you have patience, will help you read through the sections that I have in the book. So the essential results will start with what I gave you before. In chapter 1, if you remember, I gave you the Boltzmann distribution. I just gave to you. And here I will still first give to you, and then I will say, well, if you have the patience, read through this detail, I will guide through you in the reading. So in the chapter 1, we said the Boltzmann distribution or Boltzmann statistics is so if you have a quantum state, okay, that has an energy level at the EI, one quantum state, okay? And this is a system. If you have a system that has an energy EI at the temperature T, what's the probability of this system have this energy? You may have many different energy levels. And so what's the probability of the system that has this energy at the temperature T is given by the Boltzmann factor EI KBT. Well, this KB is the Boltzmann constant. It's 1.3. I always couldn't be sure whether it's 1.37 or 1.38. That's just like my wife always complains, I don't remember her birthday or 7th or 8th. Every time I got to hang up between 7 and 8. Anybody real? 8? 8? Okay. 23rd jar per Kelvin. Okay, that's Boltzmann kind of factor. And this is the probability of finding the system having this energy. And this energy must be what's allowable, quantum mechanically allowable for the system. So you from quantum mechanics, we got what's allowable for the system. And this is the probability of the system actually having that energy. And this is only for one quantum state. Okay? And because it's only for one quantum state, then I said that factor A is a normalization factor, so the probability must normalize to 1. That means if I sum all the quantum states, all this probability must normalize to 1. So that's the way I will determine this is, all quantum states. I sum, I find out what is the A. Okay? Right? And now, let's look at a few examples. Again, in chapter 1, I already gave you this example, but let me put it back. And if we do a classical particle, monatomic atom, so the energy kinetic, it's only kinetic energy. So in the classical limit, it's Vx squared plus Vy squared plus Vz squared. And if you do the quantum limit, you get E, you have several quantum number, L, I don't want to use LK, no, I, LN. I don't want to use M for mass. And that will be H squared 8M DXI squared plus L DY squared and N DZ squared. That's the particle in a box solution, quantum mechanical particle in a box solution. Okay? So you have two ways. You can either start this or do that. Okay, let's do the classical way. So the classical way at the normalization is because in the classical limit, kx, ky, kz can take any value, continuum. And its velocity is not a magnitude, so it's minus infinite to plus infinite. It's a continuum variable. That means I can write it into integers. So what I have is really just minus infinite plus infinite kx, vx, minus infinite plus infinite. So dvx, dvy, minus infinite, plus infinite, dvz. And this Boltzmann factor is A exponential minus mvx squared plus vy squared plus vz squared, 2kbt. And this is an integrand equals 1. So from here, you solve this integral, triple integral. You can convert it into a spherical coordinate, or you can split it into three integrals. Either way. But you, what you get is m 2 pi kbt. So substitute this a, two-thirds. So substitute this a into the p, what do you find? This will be the probability of finding one particle having that specific velocity. That's a Maxwell distribution. Maxwell distribution is finding one particle having this specific velocity is 2 pi kdt 2/3 exponential m vx squared plus vy squared plus vz squared kdt 2. And if you have n particles or per unit volume, and you assume that in every n particle is following the same rule, then this is a probability of finding how many particles have in this specific velocity distribution. Specific velocity. Yes? This is the probability. Well, it's really this is not probability. This is the average speaking. How many particles will have that velocity? Okay, so that's for this we often use the symbol F. Okay, so this is a Maxwell. That's a very classical. Yes. Ah. I got the problem with symbol crisis. J?
No, not that.
That one? Okay. Yes, but this is the average value. This is the average number of particles having that specific velocity. Okay. And so I did this way. You can do this way. You can start from here, you get a similar result. And in this way, you do the summation I, L, N, and you plug this energy into that P, EI equals 1. You sum up all possible I, L, N combination, and, right? I, L, N equals 1, 2, all this possibility. And this is where you can use density of states. You can find density of states converted into integration. This I leave you as an exercise. Okay? I mean, you go back to try it. It's not a homework. You try it yourself. Somebody is getting nervous. But this is the the Maxwell distribution. And now those energy is more or less continuous, right? Here, energy is continuous. Now I want to apply this to photons, electrons. I want to do first the electron, but for electron, I have to do some modification to the Boltzmann factor. Okay. The reason I have to do modification to the Boltzmann factor is that Boltzmann factor there really applies only to a system, closed system. It's closed system at the constant temperature, I can give that flow. If it's an open system that have mass transport with the surrounding, I have to modify that Boltzmann factor. And this is so-called the Gibbs factor that give you the probability of having a system at a specific energy EI, but also have a specific number of particles NI, because it's an open system. So EI and NI can change. Now, for a closed system, that can exchange energy with surrounding. It's isothermal. So what's the thermodynamic quantity that describes a closed system? Temperature. So Boltzmann factor here have this temperature. That's an intrinsic, say, thermodynamic property, intensive property of the system. Right? And for open system, okay, if you just think about it, again, classical thermodynamics. For a system that can also have a moving boundary in equilibrium with the surrounding, what's the thermodynamic quantity that characterizes mechanical equilibrium? Entropy is the equilibrium. If the system is in thermal equilibrium with surrounding, that's temperature, right? And if the system is in mechanical equilibrium with surrounding, it's a force. Force is a pressure. Now, if the system is in mass equilibrium with surrounding, what's the thermodynamic? Chemical concentration, flux, and at the end, there's a name called the chemical potential. Do anybody know chemical potential? Somebody heard it, some not. But that's equivalent to temperature and pressure. Mechanical equilibrium is pressure. Thermal equilibrium is temperature. And mass equilibrium is the chemical potential. So the Gibbs factor is for open system. You get the chemical potential into this. And that is the again, I have a factor here, and the EI minus mu NI and KBT. So if you look at that, you'll see what chemical potential means. The chemical potential is when you have one particle going out of the system, how much air energy it takes out. Mu times Ni. That's what the chemical potential means. Okay? And then we have two system in open system in equilibrium, the chemical potential of the particle inside equals the chemical potential of the particle outside. So that's the Gibbs factor. And now I will use Gibbs factor first to deal with the electrons. Okay? And suppose I have, look at the electron system. Let's think about the hydrogen atom we deal with, right? Hydrogen electron. Hydrogen energy level have electron minus 13.6 n squared. So if n equals 1, that's 1 n, but I have two quantum state, n, s. And of course, n equals 2 and 3, I have more quantum states. And I have a lot of hydrogen atom. Let me just, I have a box of hydrogen, not a gas. Okay, you can also extend to any electron system. I'm just trying to make a simple story there. So what I'm going to do is I'm not going to take one hydrogen atom as my system. Because when you know, if you do thermodynamic analysis, you have your freedom. You choose in your system, right? What I'm going to do is I'm choosing one quantum level, quantum state, as my system. So if I choose any of this quantum mechanical state, but this state is in equilibrium with the surrounding hydrogen, right? I have a lot of surrounding quantum mechanics because I'm dealing, in this chapter, I'm only dealing with the equilibrium process, thermodynamic, a system in thermodynamic equilibrium. Okay, I can take any quantum mechanical state, and this quantum mechanical state is in equilibrium with the rest of the system, right? Because every quantum mechanical state is in equilibrium. I can take any arbitrary quantum mechanical state. So if I take, so what my system is a one quantum mechanical state, that means one wave function, and so now, this system, if it has an electron there, it has an energy, the true energy, system energy, right? That quantum mechanical state only have an allowable energy of EI. This is the EI, that's the quantum mechanical state's energy. But if it doesn't have an electron there, it doesn't have energy. It does not have true energy. It's only allowable, right? So if I have, for one quantum mechanical state, how many possibilities I have? How many possible electrons I can have? Well, no, I'm not considering spin. One, maximum, or empty, right? One or zero, right? When it's a zero electron, When it's zero electron, what's the energy of that state? Zero. Nothing there. So in that case, my EI is zero, right? When I have one electron, what's the energy of that state? It's EI, right? Oh, okay. I, so EI, E zero equals EI equals EI. I ran out of, okay. So what I mean is, okay, this energy of this state is zero, this energy of this state is EI, right? Of the system I'm dealing. So now I see the probability of this system, that means this quantum mechanical state, is either zero or one. The sum up, the total probability must be one. Either zero electron or one electron. The total must be one. That's my normalization, right? The probability of this quantum mechanical state have zero electron plus it has one electron. That's the total possible states. That must be one. The sum of these two, right? So I do my normalization. So I do P, zero, and zero. That's to say energy zero. Have one zero particle plus P, one particle, EI. That's the energy is EI. But I have one particle. Those are two possibilities. That must sum up to one. Right? So I sum this up. I plug in when N, E is zero, N is zero. This is just A. When N is one, EI, so I get an A exponential minus EI minus mu KBT equals 1. And that will give me A, the normalization factor is exponential minus EI minus mu KBT plus 1 equals 1. That's my normalization factor. Right? Okay? So now I find the probability of this quantum mechanical, this system in either have zero particle or one particle. Right? I plug in this A back into my distribution. Now I want to find out that on average. On average, it doesn't mean, it means that if I do a lot of observation, it doesn't mean at any instant they can have this average value. Average means I do a lot of observation. So on average, how many particles that quantum mechanical state have? How many electrons it has? Huh? One half. One half is only at the absolute zero. Oh, no, it's not that. One half is some value that, let's say, it's only a specific energy level. Okay, let me give you, let's say why. Okay, now I want to find that on average. So why the probability of finding zero electron is P, zero, zero, times zero, right? How many electrons on average you have? Zero electron times the probability I get zero electron. That's a P zero zero. And the one electron times the probability of one electron. That's the average number, right? Because I know probability of finding one, probability of having one electron, I know probability of having zero electron. So I end up wanting to find the average number of electron is zero times this, one times this. Okay. And I substitute the back into, so zero times, this is of course zero, And I have here exponential minus e minus mu kBt plus 1. And here probability is exponential ei minus. Now I put, again, n equals 1 minus mu kBt. And this one I can put in the denominator. This cancels once. So what I have is exponential ei minus mu kBt plus 1. That's the average value. And I use, again, the symbol f. I don't use that square bracket n. Same. So, okay, this is n. I just change the symbol into f. Okay? So this is, you can see, it's not, it's one half when only ei equals mu. It's one half only when the ei equals the chemical potential. If ei is much larger than mu, what's this value? Very big. Zero. Okay. When ei is very much, if this energy level is very large compared to chemical potential, that energy state most likely will have no electron there. If ei is much smaller than mu, what's this value? Huh? Ei much smaller than mu. What's the f? 1. So if the energy is much smaller than chemical potential, it's most likely full, occupied, right? So this is what the distribution look like. Very sharp around the mu chemical potential. And remember, kBt is only about 26 millielectron volt at room temperature. And this is Fermi-Dirac distribution. So now already, this is one of the quantum mechanical distribution. And I'm going to finish the other one. This is electron. Now I want to look at photon. Photon, I said, again, I look at the one vibration frequency. Okay? One vibration frequency, what are the energy, possible energy of a photon? Is h nu n plus 1 half. Well, this n equals 0, 1, 2, right? At that frequency, there could be 0 photon, 1 photon, 2 photon, 3 photon, right? Again, I look at the crystal. I take one specific vibrational frequency. I see that vibration frequency is the system I'm going to analyze. The rest of this is my surrounding, the ambient. Well, I do the same thing. I do the Gibbs factor. The problem with photon is not a true particle, like an electron. Electron has mass. So when it loses, it's lost. When the electron goes out of this state, it goes to the other states. Photon, when it goes out of this state, it's not a conserved quantity. It's just gone. Okay? So there's really no that kind of particle exchange across the boundary. It's just disappeared. So you don't have that chemical potential for photon. Okay? It contributes to temperature. Yes. But it's not a true particle. Photon is not a true particle. It has momentum. It has energy. Right? But it's not something that you can measure, and it's not something that's conserved. Okay, number of photon doesn't conserve. Number of electron are conserved. Okay? So you don't have chemical potential there. And other than that difference, if there's no chemical potential, I can just use Boltzmann statistics. You can do the same, but from the Gibbs factor, but Boltzmann statistics do the job. So I do the same thing here. I want to normalize it. I need to normalize it and get a total distribution. So what I have is n equals 0 to infinite, and the A exponential here is kbt h nu. I put the en is n plus 1 half equals 1. With that, I'm going to find the A. Right? So what is this? H nu 1 half you can pull out. So E mass H nu 2 kBT A, and this exponential is minus N H nu kBT equals 1. This is a geometric series, right? N equals 0 to infinite. N equals 0 is 1, and it's a geometric series. So what is this? Summation. Geometric series summation. KBT equals 1. So here you find the A. This is the sum. So this is the A. This is the mass H nu 2 KBT. You find your A. You find the probability of finding particle at every state, you put in this back into the this distribution, you find out what's the probability of finding phonon at specific states. But let me give you the last number I want. Once you find the A, I can find out this average number N, which will be now N times P En, and n equals 0 to infinite, right? That's the average. At that quantum state that has a frequency nu, how many phonon you will have? Because I have the probability of 1 phonon, 0 phonon, all that. It must be either 0 phonon between 0 to infinite. Sum up must be 1. That's a probability normalization. So you do this sum. And this sum needs a little bit trick when you have an n, and you say you have an n times minus n there. How you do this sum? And it's a little bit trick. And you can do, at the end, okay, what do you do? If you will have, let me just sketch. If you have this one, what you do is you can take a derivative of the original n, h nu or nx, this h nu kb is x, and then you derivative with respect to x. You get an extra n there, and then after that, you do integration back. So if you do that, what do you find out? This h nu kbt minus 1. The difference from the Fermi-Dirac is here is a plus 1, here is a minus 1. There is no chemical potential, and that's a Bose-Einstein distribution. Okay, so with that, we give you all the essential of thermal statistics there. In the next lecture, I'm going to give you some sketch how you're going to read through. But we'll see you next Wednesday. The homework, I think with this, you can do it. Density of states, distribution function, I give you a few, add two more together with the density of states. So you should be close to be able to finish it.